I had to give him some more toe leather before he'd answer, but when he did it was in some detail. To ensure that no mischance should lead to his being rescued, Carl Gustav was in a dungeon in the castle, with a handy shaft in its floor that came out somewhere under the Jotunsee. His body would never be found once they popped him down there, which they would certainly do once they heard that my corpse had been delivered back to Strachan's, and the uproar over my identity was going nicely. Well, it looked bad for Carl Gustav in any event. Not that it was any concern of mine, but it helped to fan my righteous indignation, which was powerful enough on my own behalf, I can tell you. "To go to a—" says I. "You're a foul creature. You don't deserve to live another minute." "You swore," he babbled, struggling in his bonds. "You gave me your solemn promise." "So I did," says I. "To let you go, wasn't it? Well, I will. Come along. Let's have you up." I dragged him to his feet and took my belt from round his ankles. He could hardly stand with the pain of his toes, and I had to support him. "Now, Degote," says I, "I'm going to let you go. But where, eh? That's the point, ain't it?" "What do you mean?" His eyes were staring with fear. "You promised." "So did Bismarck. So did you. You're a dirty creature, Degote. I think you need a wash." I propelled him to the edge of the precipice and held him for a second. "I'll let you go, all right, you murderous cur. Down there." He let out a shriek you could have heard in Munich and tried to wrench free, but I held him fast and let him look, just to let him know he was really going to die. Then I said, "Gehen Sie weg, Degote," and gave him a push. For an instant he tottered on the brink, trying to keep his balance and screaming hoarsely. Then he fell out and down, and I watched him turn slowly over in the air, crash onto the jutting rocks halfway down the cliff, and spin outwards like a rag doll with his legs waving, before he vanished into the spray at the precipice foot. It was an interesting sight. I'd killed before, of course, although never in what you might call cold blood, but I've never felt anything but satisfaction over the end of Degote. He deserved to die, if anyone ever did. He was a heartless, cruel rascal, and I'd have been lucky to come off as easily if things had been the other way around. I'm not justifying myself either for torturing him or killing him, for I don't need to. Both had to be done, but I'm honest enough to admit I enjoyed doing them. He was a good horseman, though. However, his death, though first-rate in its way, solved nothing so far as my immediate comfort and safety were concerned. I was still in the very devil of a pickle, I realized as I gazed round the empty clearing and tried to decide what to do next. It was certain that Degote had arranged some means of getting word quickly to Rudy and Co. to say that Flashy was a goner and all was well. How long would it be before they realized something had gone wrong? An hour or two? A day? I must assume it would be sooner rather than later, and then the hunt would be up with a vengeance with me as the poor little fox. I had to get out of Strachan's at once, but where to? These thoughts put me into a blue funk, of course, and I paced up and down that summit, muttering, "Where? Where? Oh, Jesus, how can I get out of this?" Then I steadied up, telling myself that when you've been hounded by Afghans and come safe home, you need hardly take the vapours over a pack of Germans. Which is just rubbish, of course, as I assured myself a second later. One's as beastly dangerous as the other. Still, this was a comparatively civilised country. I spoke the language tolerably, and I'd had enough experience of skulking, surely, to get me out of it. I hadn't a horse, and only a knife for protection. Degote's empty pistols were useless, but the first thing was to get down from the Jotun-Gipfel and plot my course as I went. Before starting out, I burned the incriminating papers that had been sewn in my tunic. Then I took to the woods at right angles from the path we'd been following, scrambling down over mossy rocks and through thick brushwood. It wasn't easy going, but I was too busy with my thoughts to notice much. One point stuck clear in my mind, and it was the advice given me by the late lamented Sergeant Hudson when he and I were on the run from the Afridis on the Jalalabad Road. "When the bastards are after you, go in the direction where they'll never think of looking for you, even if it's right back in their faces." Well, I wasn't going to Strella, that was flat.